This is the one with ass shots.
Gunshots?
Companies of Oud.
And a fart in a corridor.
It's called the Satan Pit.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Soylent, Zandud, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when?
Reviewing all new Who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than
Who back when?
Who back when?
Welcome to episode N023, The Satan Pit. What's happening, y'all?
He demands an answer.
What is happening, yo?
What is y'all?
Y'all.
I am Rawmeister.
Goddamn right you are.
Okay, hey.
To your left is...
As always, your Nicoloni.
Two steps to the Rawmeister's right is...
Goddog, it's me, Drew.
One step to your left...
Yes, it's Papa LaPonk himself.
Damn right. Yeah, that's me. All right, well, yeah, fantastic.
We've not been in the same podcasting room for quite some time, so hopefully we're going to make some magic. So
it's been a while. I feel like I actually owe an apology to the ladies and gentlemen of podcast land for this. I was away for a few weeks, and that is basically the reason why we haven't released an episode in a while.
Oh, I haven't been here since 1966 or whatever year the last movie was.
You know what? You look great for a 50-year-old.
Thank you. You could look after yourself a little more. Stay out of the sun.
Right.
Well, this is N023.
God, I'm right.
The Satan Pit.
Wait, what pit?
The Satan Pit.
That is that's a pretty bad pit.
That's a shit pit.
Which is part two of the double feature that is the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit.
Let's just jump straight into it then.
Shall we?
Let's jump into it.
Before we jump into a B-Scout, let's just say we literally just rewatched the episode. And this is how many weeks since we reviewed the last episode?
Three and a half, four. That seems a low number.
I think it's over a month ago, to be honest.
Oh, my days.
Even saying that, I mean, as far as I recall, this one is far better than its predecessor.
Well, at the beginning, you have the recap of the episode.
That's true.
And I have notes on the recap, but we could do the B-Scout first.
Also, once again, by the way, let's definitely give due credits. Once again, we are recording this episode in front of a live studio audience, this time of one. Hello, Miriam!
Hello.
Woo!
That was weird. Okay, moving on.
Should it go on the record that I haven't seen the predecessor episode and I did talk?
That will become obvious.
It is now on the record. Let's jump into B-Scout land.
We start off where we left off, with the upstairs crowd in Space Base 6 or whatever finally opening fire on the Oud.
The only way to survive, it transpires, is to send out a broadcast flare, brainstorm, mind, polarity, reverser, or whatever.
Meanwhile, downstairs Doc decides to spelunk into the spoilers, Satan Pit.
Blah, blah, blah. I got stuck with the worst line. It's Satan or something. I don't know. You can suck a bag of dicks. B-Scout over.
You are welcome. That is possibly the most vague B-Scout so far.
Did with good reason. This fucking episode was vague as balls.
I feel like almost the entire episode is just a fight scene.
Well, yeah, as well as kind of, it seems relatively pointless. It's basically two scenes. There are two scenes in this
There's
episode.
Now I know what a TV dinner feels like scene. And then number two is what?
That it's just big horny devil man.
Yeah, exactly.
The big horny devil man monologue. It's that and the soliloquy. Like, TV dinner soliloquy.
There is a good recap at the beginning, though, that we need to give for the benefit of Rory, who didn't even see it.
You should listen to our previous New Who review.
Okay, I'll go and do that, and we'll be back in a minute. Okay, I've listened to the episode, and I'm totally caught up.
Wasn't I funny?
This episode starts off where the Impossible Planet left off, with Ida, the scientist,
And the doctor down by the seal, where the pit is now open. The beast
is
open.
The guy who sang
you skipped two scenes.
Have I skipped two scenes?
What happens is that the very first thing that happens is that Leon gets his wish.
Yes,
or
I do.
The last episode, he's like, why is nobody firing guns? Everybody has guns and they're just backing away. And the first thing we do is see bullets flying past the camera.
Very true. Yes, finally they actually use the guns. So, in terms of production, I'm assuming, I mean, I don't know, but I'm assuming that this double feature was produced in one stretch.
I have no concept of why they split it. Like, what that could have been one relatively decent episode with some filler taken out.
Probably, yeah, that's true.
And some better episode added in its place.
Yeah. Okay, that's also true. There is probably enough substance to carry Doctor Who as a TV show for one episode, not so much a double feature.
Yeah.
But so from a financial, from a production standpoint, why don't they actually use the guns until episode two?
It's a bizarre bifurcation in
good
my
word.
Mind.
Well, I think it's because the genuine peril, like the actual physical peril to everyone involved, turns up in the second episode.
Well, you say that, but the first episode ended on the biggest cliffhanger possible, wasn't it? Everybody was advancing and the planet was falling into the black hole. The pit was opening. And then within the first 10 seconds
of
the second episode...
To be fair, you can't shoot us most of that. Like the black hole or the Satan, but you can't shoot at most of that.
What I was going to say was the first episode, it ends on this amazing cliffhanger, which, in our last episode we thought, wow, that's a pretty good convergence of events. And
very
then
true.
In the first 10 seconds, bullets are fired, the captain says, oh, I've stabilised the ship, everything's all right now,
which
we're not falling into the black hole.
Undoes all of episode one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is what pissed me off, about the first 5 seconds.
Oh, well, really now I think there's a reason for all of that. But
what is the reason?
We'll get to it. Okay. There's a payoff later on.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
So they fire guns at the Ood, blah, 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 blah.
Gun woman who we haven't seen at all in the previous episode, and
so she can buy it. Right, yeah, absolutely. That happened in the last episode. Random person, you bought it.
In the last episode, are you referring to the old guy with the silver temples?
I don't know. No, it was just one dude. I think he was relatively young.
Yeah, just the bland guy holding a gun next to the ethicist, and he got mind-globed by the Ood the second he appeared on screen.
Yeah.
They fire guns at the Ood. Doctor and what's her name? Ida. They're already on their way down. Actually, rather, they're already at the bottom. The Ood are basically too powerful, so in order to overcome this adversary, the only way forward is to instigate... What's it called again?
Strategy 9.
Like, strategy inserts number here.
You know why it's doubly ridiculous? Is that the subterfuge of calling it Strategy 9 happens, when they're surrounded by telepathic creatures whose consciousness has just been elevated 20 times.
Holy shit!
How the fuck are they not going to figure out what Strategy 9 is?
They're only on basic level 50.
No, they are on...
They're at 100 now, man.
Whatever, at least they're not 120.
That equals people screaming at you.
Can we skip ahead to the seal? Because I think that's the first interesting thing that happens.
Let's do that.
Ida and the Doctor are at the seal that's been opened, the pit that's revealed itself, and the Doctor goes on his weird little monologue about wanting to jump, and the thing at the back of his head always telling him to jump. And
which once again brings him back to the whole, the nature of mankind is to always jump into the unknown.
Do you know what really upsets me
this
about
this whole
episode?
It's a mankind wankathon.
Yeah, no, but do you know what's worse about it? Is that we see the paternal Doctor, and I feel weirdly infantilized watching it, just like, oh, you guys, you might run around, you might bang your head into a coffee table every so often, but aren't you intrepid?
Yeah, and seriously, doesn't it also make you think that every other race in the universe is really effing boring?
I just think it's just that bullshit thing that maybe, I don't know, probably T. Davis and the BBC thought would be really cool to teach kids, and it's like, oh, you know what, you're all numinous, wonderful, special flowers, even if you don't feel it, everyone's important, and you're part of the human race, it's exploratory, and also it's like, nah, you've never been to the moon, you work in Greggs. Let's just be honest about that. Not everyone's fucking special. Moving on.
I feel like we should give responsibility.
Working Greggs aren't special? What
I don't know, but they're not like this weird, like this intrepid galaxy conquering, like, you know, ridiculous.
I feel like the moral of the story is really, like, if
Greg's
you're...
the greatest adventure of all.
Wait, what?
Some say Greg's is the most, is the greatest adventure of them all, yeah. Which is fair enough.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
Okay, fair enough. I still feel like the moral of the story is basically, if you are pseudo-suicidal, then you're a good person. Like, if you're willing to jump into a situation that is very likely to kill the shit out of you...
I think it's worse than that.
...then that's admirable.
I think the lesson is worse than that. It's not so much that those people exist and they're admirable, but because we're all humans... Because he always says, oh, humans, you're all like this, you're all like this. Is that some people choose to be pioneers and to be intrepid and to jump and to do crazy suicidal things. Most of us don't. But apparently we have this shared fucking responsibility. It's all cool. Because those people do it, we're also intrepid by association. Humans are all the same, aren't we all intrepid?
We're all just basically Scott of the Antarctic.
Yeah. That's racism, man.
What?
You know species. What that is?
Yeah.
Fuck that. Definitely.
Yeah, that's humanism.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I hate being this infantilized version of David Tennant's Doctor. I don't need a dad. I've got a dad. Screw you.
You haven't seen the episode where he goes to Greg's and fucking tears them a new one.
Alright, so Druid, what is the next bullet point?
My next bullet point, well, after where I write about they can't stop themselves shooting all over everything, suddenly, is Ida is... Or is it Rose? A woman, anyway, is posing a question to the Doctor, because that seems to be their function in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is there no such thing? Doctor! It must have been Rose.
Wait, based on what?
Based on the devil.
Oh, right.
Yes, because they're all pretty sure he's down there by now.
Haven't they... Actually, hang on. I mean, it's been a month since we watched the first installment of this double feature, but haven't they already established that the devil is actually downstairs?
No, so there is a point in this episode where, through the Ood... So Toby has apparently been de-deviled. He's, like, you know, the is passed on to the Ood, and Rose explains, oh, it's not Toby anymore, it's passed on to the Ood, that happens earlier.
He's clean!
Exactly, some shit like that. And at some point during their rampage, they stop with the monitor and have a bit of a conversation with the Doctor. And they say, I'm the Beast, you know, I'm before time. What does that mean? Before time.
Oh, right.
What is that? It's... Okay, I can't say this any clearer, motherfucker.
Which actually is... I felt about half an hour ago while we were at that stage in rewatching this episode. I thought that was really interesting because he is a Time Lord, and here is something that is actually literally saying that it existed before time was even a factor.
It's the one thing he can't lord over.
Yes, goddamn right. That's exactly it. All of a sudden, he is super duper confused. And the fact that time is no longer a factor sort of excludes the Doctor as a participant.
Yeah, it's good when you've had, in previous episodes, the Doctor being praised by every villain and foe.
Everyone.
So clever.
Yeah.
That he's like, fuck, I have no knowledge of this whatsoever.
Fuck, that's not real.
What happens next?
So, no, that exchange is even more interesting because he does that whole back and forth about, oh, before time for the... Also, by the way... As our terrestrial beings, we don't have a concept before time, but we might theorise that it might exist. Surely he had, at some point during his 800 years of fucking wandering around, thought space, time and matter were created at the same point in the crucible of the universe. What if there was something before that? Has he not stopped to even ask that fucking question?
We've
that
all had me. The headache which comes of trying to think about this, right?
Surely Time Lords would have had the biggest headache of all, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So someone stop and go, maybe there was... I mean, look at all this crazy stuff I see on a daily motherfucking basis. Which he does sort of allude to at some point later on with Ida. He says, you know, I believe I haven't seen everything in the universe.
And he must...
The more important part of this, this sort of back and forth... is the Beast, the devil, Lucifer, you know, the Morning Star, all that, revealing what he knows about each of them and sort of talking to them directly and revealing an innermost dark, you know, fear. So to the captain, the reluctant captain, to Rose is the best one because Rose is some great foreshadowing of you will die in battle.
Is that what he says?
Yeah, you will die in battle very soon.
The only thing that I remember is that there's some chick with daddy issues.
That's Ida. But that's not fully explained. Toby the Virgin. Or was it? No.
Toby was the Virgin.
Toby is a Virgin.
As someone who studied ancient texts at university, that is not a surprise.
But yeah, so the, you know, they each get... And the Doctor who killed his own race. Or no, oh, I know him like he knows me.
Yes. The killer of his own kind.
Yeah, something like that.
That's basically...
Exactly like that, motherfucker.
So did this sign remind anyone else of the God bit from Star Trek V?
Oh, I like it. That's a very nice reference. Yes, very true.
Felt reminiscent.
Yeah, and actually quite relevant in a way, because this is...
Sorry, Star Trek and Who fans.
No, but actually, I think that's quite relevant, because you have something that is sort of a space entity. It's a...
They always know shit about you. They just do.
Yeah, but, well, just by sheer virtue of having been around for a long time. Like, this is a creature or a life form in the universe that has been around since before there was even a concept of time. Clearly, it will know shit. Right?
Wait, is he before time or before there's a concept of time? Because those are different things.
Yeah,
that's like the that's a good before point. Time is still after.
I think it's before. He actually says before the cataclysm, which I took to mean the Big Bang.
Big Bang.
Yeah, that's what I
took to mean. And he said before this universe.
Yeah, that's what I. That's what.
Which
I
is
saying,
again.
So
the Big Bang.
It is before time, space, and matter were created. Which yeah, is
unlike the land before was time. Created.
So here is
he
the.
He just listens in on everything.
Fun trivia.
What a dick.
Fun trivia. So the Doctor in his rant. So, but which beast are you? The you know. The Draconia, Daemons, which are all like, so the Draconia, Frontier in Space.
Deimos, I feel like he said.
Oh, Deimos, no, you're right. Sorry, Frontier Space, no, Deimos, sorry, I meant from the Daemons, the episode.
Oh.
What else do we have? We've got Caleb, God of War, who appears in Daleks and Genesis Daleks. Is that me? Yeah, I think that's all I got. Yeah, right?
He says that when he's going down on the rope.
Going down on the rope?
Yeah.
This is a sex scene that completely eluded me.
Very funny.
You know,
I missed that.
When he's just dangling there.
But either way, I always like, and actually T. Davis era Doctor has always been good at this, which is just reeling off 4 or 5 references to the pantheon of Who. In a sort of monologue, and it's to show the Doctor's worldliness or universaliness, I guess.
Sure.
And also to pay a bit of homage, which I quite like. I don't think it's any deeper than that, but that's pretty cool.
That's what she said.
Yeah. After that, the Doctor reassures them all that this is all parlor tricks and psychological stuff and whatever. He doesn't really know you. This is just what people do. And then the cable snaps.
The Doctor and Ida are now... They're downstairs. They're by the pit that we already saw in part one of this double feature.
We get the Captain saying, "They're stuck down there." Which immediately made me think, well, they're not going to be stuck down there, are they? Because there's going to be a TARDIS there, sunny side up, like Ponkin predicted.
As far as we know, Doctor and Ida are stranded somewhere near the seal to the pit. And Captain Zack has been isolated in the control room. And the rest of the team are somewhere in the space base.
Yeah, and how we get this... Yeah, we get this thing where the people in the space base, or... Actually, what was it called? The...
Sanctuary Base 6.
Sanctuary Base, that's
Danny,
what it is.
Danny, Rose, and Mr. Jefferson, right?
Mr. Jefferson.
Oh, and Toby, wait. And Toby.
In Sanctuary Base 6 or whatever.
9.
No, it's Strategy 9.
Strategy 9.
Strategy 9 of Sanctuary Base 6.
55 minutes of oxygen.
I'm so confused right now. Okay, so the plan basically is the humans aboard the space base...
Sanctuary base!
Shut up. They now need to... now I know what a TV dinner feels like. Through the ventilation shafts until they get to the point where they can press a button, like a Deus Ex Machina kind of button, that will zero the base level 100 telepathy power of the Oot, right? So that's basic. That's the mission that we have upstairs.
Yep.
Meanwhile, downstairs, what is the mission?
Ida and the Doctor are just completely stranded. So the Doctor thinks the only way to go is down at this point.
Yum.
Yeah. So he goes down. He goes all the way down.
Oh, he has a little existential crisis first. Yeah, he has a little Tennant-style existential.
You've got to have a word with
yourself
before you do that.
Actually, hang on. Let's take a moment to discuss this. So, we have... This is a double feature that is very clearly just a mankind wankathon. Humankind is so great because they jump into the unknown, blah, 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 blah.
No. Actually, he makes a point of saying that jumping is stupid. Oh, it's not about jumping.
It's about falling.
The fuck does that mean?
That is utter garbage.
Can you soundbite
David Tennant?
Just him going with his, you know, his jaw extruded dramatically.
It's not the urge to jump, it's deeper than that. It's the urge to fall.
You can't jump without falling, but you can fall without jumping.
That's a haiku, man.
No, it is not.
Is it an
pretty confident on that one.
Let's discuss this, because...
It's sort of a Zen logic poem.
But the Doctor, who hitherto, I feel, has always been ready to jump. At this point, he goes, I retreat. I can't believe that I'm doing this, but I retreat. Isn't that kind of... I mean, I feel like that's worthy of mention.
I think that might have happened earlier in the episode, before all the Satan talking.
Oh, really?
Sorry if I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
It happened right at the beginning, when, you know, him
talking about that
stuff, and he was saying, you know, it's that urge to jump, the urge, to, and then he goes, ooh.
Okay, well, fine. Let's discuss that. Is that not an interesting point of view, or like an interesting observation in the lifetime of the Doctor?
I cannot recall
a single other occasion where the Doctor has retreated.
It would be more interesting if he hadn't gone down later.
And also, okay.
But I think that's just there to enhance the peril. He doesn't want to go down, now he has no choice. Back upstairs. Upstairs for a moment. So the Rose, etc., they've got the script to make the guy, you know, the Ood incapacitated, and they're going through...
By script, do you mean the plan to zero the 100?
Yeah. They've got a disc to do it. And they're going through the like, robot service tubes, where there's no air.
And there are, however, in the absence of air, there are so many ass shots.
There are lots of ass shots.
So many ass shots. There is at least... There are at least two gratuitous ass shots of Rose.
Here's an interesting... No one's happy about that.
One guy was happy about it.
Rose says to Danny, oh, not your best side. And then Toby says, oh, it's not much better from back here.
I thought he said the opposite.
It's not so bad from back here.
That's what I thought.
It's not so bad.
Yeah. Oh, I totally missed that. And also,
Toby is a dirty bastard.
So, you know, they're having to go through a small enclosed, you know, maze in sci-fi. It's a relatively, like, it's kind of like aliens and all those sort of things. Where, and also having someone on comms try to, like, track you and say, oh, you should go left, you should go right. That's established. What I really like is the idea of having air fucking follow them. So the person, you know, sort of doing the controls, the captain, is actually sustaining them, not just telling them directions and showing and seeing, like, you know, bad guys moving around the maze.
This is Mr. Crossflame, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Captain Crossflame.
Zach Crossflame.
He's fucking cash the entire time. He's so, like, everything's an effort.
Yeah, he should be wearing a t-shirt and flip-flops.
He's acting like he's been called in on his day off.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Jenny hasn't turned up to open up, so he's gonna...
He's got to man the shop.
Yeah, it's very, very annoying.
While they're in these, like, Jeffrey's tubes slash this sort of
like
TV
Jeffrey's
tube.
Tubes, sorry.
Yes, slash whatever, blah, blah, blah.
There's a Crystal Maze slash Nightmare crossover.
Slash, this is what
it's
a TV
like a
dinner feels like.
It's an Aztec zone.
It's
while they're in there.
Imperfection.
Okay, so we're back in the ducts, the vents, or whatever, and they're hustling through, and Jefferson as the soldier.
Silver Temple.
Yeah, absolutely. Does the only thing that a soldier on this mission could do is to sacrifice himself gallantly.
After shooting his entire load. Yeah.
Also, we're given at the time...
Can we just point out that there's a fart scene before he dies?
Oh,
yes. In fact, there are two fart scenes.
When
they first get into the tunnels, she says, oh, Danny, much like the second time, in fact, which is how I recognised it as completely identical.
I think I probably only heard the second
one. Yeah, he's trumping all the way along as far as...
But that was a very weird line, because he sort of tried to justify it with sort of, I'm not comfortable here, or something.
Yeah,
which is strange.
I'm not happy about this.
It's really the least of everyone's concerns at this point.
He played it like he was farting because he was unhappy, though, which seemed odd.
He was a nervous farter. Anyway, so as Jefferson gallantly sacrifices himself for the good of the group, we're privy to Toby at this point a couple of times, and Jeff says, no, Rose, come on, just leave him. And I think at that point we're supposed to read into the fact that actually nothing left Toby at that point, and he's still possessed. And actually that comes to fruition at the end of the maze, when
wink at the Ood.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, shush, shush.
Wink, wink, wink. I'm still evil.
I really did enjoy that shot, actually. I thought Toby did a smashing job.
Yeah, it was very good. Very good. So we're privy now to, as an audience of the dramatic hour, to know that Toby is still the devil and can actually make it appear as if he isn't. Well, this brings me back to my point that I made earlier, my cryptic about your point, Drew, that, you know, things were all going to shit and then they suddenly weren't. And I feel like that's his ploy.
Right, so at that point, the devil was escaping properly into Toby.
Yeah.
And then once he's out, he stabilises the planet, and he can get on with some insidious shit up top.
Yeah, he's going Iago style, because what he's doing is creating false peril to then escape. Because actually, if he creates real peril, he's fucked too.
Yeah.
Has he been the devil the entire time?
Yeah. Since we saw that first possession, he has. He'd just be able to suppress it for his own...
Either he's been, you know, artfully controlling Toby to make it look like he's not the devil, or he's been genuinely retreating at a time where Toby acting, looking shit scared, you know, would serve his purposes anyway.
And, well, the thing, if you think about the entire art of the narrative, it points to that. Yeah. Because he makes it look like, oh, we're in peril, we've got to get off this planet, we've got to get off this planet, in a Toby-style panic. And that's what they try to do, and that's actually what he wanted, what the devil wants.
Let's focus on the downstairs for a little bit, because we've had...
You are a very willing lover.
Thanks.
You want to get back to the big horny bastard?
The doctor is downstairs. He's there with Ida. He's actually, at the moment, spelunking down to Satan himself. But we've had a few comms between the doctor and Rose. And I feel like at some point in the middle of the stuff that we've been discussing at this point, or up until now, we've had even more references, like ham-fisted references to... The Doctor and Rose are in love.
Well, we have the lovely sort of tell Rose I
oh yeah,
tell her she knows.
Yeah, that's later on. That's like, actually, you know what? Yeah, let's jump to that point where the Doctor goes, fuck it, I'm in the middle of darkness. Nick, you and I both reacted to this, actually. Like, he's suspended in complete and utter darkness, but we can see him perfectly well, blah, blah, blah. That's not how light works. Who cares? Tell Rose, actually, you know what? She knows, in brackets, that I love her.
No. I think that actually what he would have said was, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I think it'd have been like, we're out of milk. We're so out of milk. That would have been the message.
Either way, at this point, I hate to say it, I buy it. I feel like at this point, it's actually somehow weirdly legitimized. In the first installment of this double feature, I wasn't buying it at all. I felt like it was incredibly ham-fisted. I felt like it was just too big a leap from the previous solo episode. But at this point, I buy it. They are in love. It works.
Every 10 minutes like clockwork. Eventually you come around.
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's still made... It's done. It's performed more realistically.
He's going to lose all of those points in the next sort of 10
minutes. Oh, the next episode is...
No. In the next 10 horrific. Minutes of this episode, he loses all those points for me. I had those...
Oh, I see.
I was with you on that idea that I was kind of bought into that, you know, two lovers that don't want to be... torn asunder, but actually he loses it for me right at the end. So he's falling for what's apparently 10 miles, and we find him. Let's speed to the sort of fun bit, which is he gets cushioned by some air, his stomach falls off, and he's like, oh shit, I can breathe, oh this is awesome, oh people want me down here, someone wants me down here. And ridiculously unobservant passage follows, where he's like, look at these markings, it tells a story. Oh, look, there's a story. Oh, here's a vase. Oh, there's a 300-foot fire-breathing devil.
Yeah,
thing.
Maybe pay slightly less attention to the cave painting. Yeah.
Cool as a motherfucker.
It was pretty cool.
It actually
yeah,
is.
To be fair, CGI goes. That was badass.
Yeah, it totally works.
Oh, no, I meant he was playing it cool as a motherfucker.
Oh, right.
Cave paintings. Oh, and a big devil thing.
So all the intelligence, the entire personality of this body has been withdrawn, spoiler alert, and what you have before you is just the flesh of the devil. But still, it very clearly has personality.
It quite
like
clearly has personality.
It kind of reminded me of a slightly stupid dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but even a slightly stupid like dog has personality. It's not something that you would necessarily
kind of
invite to a party.
It was almost kind of cocking its head questioningly at him. Like, oh, what was going on?
Yeah, and it was... His tongue was coming out. It was very dog-like. What I was annoyed was, you know, downstairs, they make it perfectly clear where if you could just turn around, then you'd get it anyway. But upstairs, it's like, let me tell you a story in ancient indecipherable language.
Go on.
Well, and so it did, and they didn't. You know, it said, big horny bastard down below. All they need is an arrow pointing into the earth. Then people be like, well, yeah, all right.
You had me a big horny bastard.
Yeah. But anyway, so we've got this this scene where the doctor's trying to figure out. And it's a monologue, isn't it? Like,
can I just say at the beginning that really disappointed me?
Yeah.
That he didn't get to have a final, you know, verbal sparring match with the devil.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a disappointment, but that's the way that the whole plot is set up. He is confronted solely with the flesh, like the lack of intellect, basically, and he is all intellect, right? Like, the only way that you could pin him against someone who is worthy as an adversary is, yeah, like, you pick the master, who is also all intellect.
But you know what annoys me also about this, is that at some point he says, oh, but where's your voice? Why aren't we talking? You know, what do I do? Where's your voice? I heard it before we talked. It was
super clever.
It was clever. No, scratch that. It was brilliant or something. It's like, hang on, you really didn't talk for that long, and he actually didn't say anything that brilliant. Where are you inferring? Yeah, it was fucking brilliant.
I was thinking that as well. Like, are you considering the fact that, like, grammatically you formed sentences relatively well?
Because he didn't display anything close to it.
Well, there was excellent dick.
Yeah. Excellent dick.
You've got to listen to what he's not saying.
Yes. It's fucking bullshit.
It's anyway, all the space between the words counts.
Again, I think you find that a lot with the Tennant era Doctor, is that people are brilliant. Oh my god, you're brilliant. Oh, you're so thick. Oh, you're brilliant. You're so thick. Oh, you're brilliant.
Do you think this maybe really
is difficult?
Wait, sorry?
Writing brilliance is difficult.
Yeah, just
it's much easier to imply
brilliance as well.
So much easier to imply brilliance than to write it.
I'm going to volunteer the point of view of the non-Brit in the audience, in the podcasting part of this thing.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No idea.
Go with him on this one, okay?
The term brilliant, as a non-Brit, the term brilliance is incredibly British to me. So the fact that the term, oh, brilliant, is being used is like, I'm going to emphasize the Britishness of this. This is, what, this is season 2 of the revival? It's already fairly big in the States, right? I feel like at this point they're already hamming up the Britishness of the show.
Could be.
Yeah.
Or an alternative theory is it could be, you know, brilliant as in, you know, a brilliantly bright light. Maybe it's a Morningstar Lucifer reference.
I think it's Rory. I think Rory's on the nail in the head when he says that writing brilliance is way harder than implying it.
Well, I'm just thinking, if you want to write brilliance, you need to get James Joyce or someone in to do it for you, and that's just not on, like, because he's dead. But, you know, and you probably wouldn't want to get involved. But
such a cogent point until you carried on.
Well, no, I just mean that you need a genius to write genius, so if you haven't got that, you can either imply it or write genius badly, which will be genius. So,
That's what's happened. That's exactly what's happened. It's easier to... So as we've seen the Doctor be brilliant, let's say, as an audience member, we've all bought into that's awesome, so we basically take on writ that what he recognises as brilliance is also brilliance. It's a rhetoric argument, is of an appeal to authority. That's what it is. It sucks. It's lazy.
It's a bit like the writing equivalent of the CGI, you know, scapes we were going to see in the previous episode that was a red blotch. Yeah. And so on. You know, they really have ambition in this two-parter, which they don't typically meet.
Upstairs, the Ood have basically been defeated.
So, okay, upstairs, we'll recap upstairs. They've made it to the Ood habitation, they've whacked the disc in, the Ood are fucked up, and they're kind of skitzing out, they're doing a weird, like, dubstep dance. And Zachary, they're all reunited, right? But so at this point, Zachary takes command and says, we're leaving. And as Toby and Aurora, they all go in, and Rose doesn't want to go. She wants to stay with the Doctor, even though he's missing, presumed dead.
Yeah, at which point, boom, shack, lack, all of a sudden, she's essentially kidnapped by the future humans.
Yeah, because they won't let another one die.
By the ethicist and archaeologist turned premier-grade bouncers.
Yeah.
Just instantly, having shown no backbone at all throughout the episode, suddenly they muscle up on either side of her, and she is gripped.
So they're hightailing off the planet, they get in the rocket, and Toby's super happy, because we all know who's the devil.
Yeah, I was, at this point, I was watching his eyes in every single scene, going, are they red now? Are they red now? Are they red now?
You'd know when they're red, though.
Yeah.
Sorry,
you would.
All right.
Cool. Anyway,
sorry for being excited about anything.
they're sodding off. They're getting the hell out of Dodge. And we, Ida's left on a planet who's, I think she's passed out at this point. And the doctor's trying to piece together the puzzle of why that weird horny dude is down there, why he's chained up, how he, you know, we murder him, I guess. And how to save Rose. Right?
Just Rose.
He only gives a fuck about Rose.
Yeah. At the moment, there are just two parallel scenes unfolding. The rocket is going away and Toby is narrating with glee, you know, exactly how far they're away from the black hole, and he begins a countdown from 40 at one point. To crown all the many countdowns in this
episode. The way the countdowns work in this episode is insane, because we have like the 3-2 go, we have the 3-2-1 go, and we have the 3-2-1 let's break for a moment. We have a cup of tea, everyone kind of doesn't give a shit about this episode.
Everything.
And then all of a sudden, go! Like, yeah.
It's like 40 seconds. Why fucking 40? We've done everything on the count of three up till now.
And everything that merits a countdown, at least to this point in the episode, is the kind of stuff that you really don't want to delay. So, like, just fucking press a button and get it over with.
Yeah, it's like giving you oxygen in. Are you holding your breath yet? And the second scene is just the doctor leaping from logic crag to logic rock, you know, over the mountains, figuring out the stuff that's happening with the devil, and it's crazy. And at one point, he thinks that, you know, the devil has given him, you know, Hobson's choice, essentially, of, well, I can't remember what the first choice is, but the second choice, which is supposed to be equally as bad, is letting Rose die. As if the devil gives the slightest shit about Rose or anyone. He just wants the rocket out of there. Surely.
Yeah, at this point, the devil is Toby. He's aboard the spaceship. The devil that the doctor is encountering is actually completely irrelevant to this story.
I know, but at some point, when the doctor realizes his terrible choice, the devil, the disembodied Cocker Spaniel of the devil, laughs. So again, that's more recognition.
Really?
Yeah, he laughs.
I don't.
No, he definitely does. And
I must have missed that then.
Yeah,
I remember him literally just being an angry monster, and that is it.
It's weird because I watched this originally 9 years ago. In the intervening 9 years, in my head, I remembered very clearly the visual of the devil laughing and cocking his head back and laughing some more. And in my mind, it grew into... But then if you actually listen back, it's just like the sound of a bag of chips being dropped into a puddle or a dog coughing. It's just like...
I got a definite sense of vacancy from the devil. I really didn't get the impression it was thinking anything.
Yeah, same here. I thought it was just a really angry... Like, basically, an animal.
Yeah.
Just a really angry, tied up, or chained, rather, animal.
I found that it was... I felt, in spite of its ferocious, it almost seemed benign. Like, it wouldn't actually do shit.
It was raging! I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it benign.
Well, I don't know, it didn't feel like it would ever actually act on its...
do you think now that we've equated that version of the devil with the dog, have you now emoted?
No.
You love it, and you just want to take care of it, and take it home, and
no,
they'll never bite you.
But it actually seemed like it would be all bark and no bite, because it doesn't have any real intention behind it.
It's raging as a motherfucker.
Yeah,
it didn't seem like it would actually do anything.
It's basically a grizzly bear. Like, it doesn't have the intelligence to calculate, oh, this is how I can apply as much evil as
by
humanly
benign,
possible.
I don't mean friendly. I just mean blank.
Right.
Know.
But it
Regardless.
Definitely laughs. It laughs pointedly.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
So, the iteration, what you were saying is why the devil would give a fuck about Rose, doesn't, other than the fact that she's a pawn in this game that he's created, this level of chess, checkmate, we're done, you're over, I'm getting out of here. You will never, like, throw us all into the black hole because you love Rose too much, and I know that about you. That's
that
why
makes
you love
sense.
Him.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor reveals his ace up his sleeve, which is...
He doesn't give a shit about anyone. That, I feel, is his ace up his sleeve. Well, his ace up his sleeve is his understanding of what is the greater good. No matter how much he loves Rose. Because at this point, they have absolutely clarified this. He does love Rose. It, no matter how much he loves her, though,
yeah,
the rest of the universe well, and no, the perpetuity, like the breadth of eternity is more important than his relationship.
Because the dialogue, I think, goes when he sort of reveals, like, oh, well, you think, you know, I've seen demigods, this god, that god, and if I believe in one thing, just one thing, I believe in her. So he smashes the thing with the, apparently with the full belief, faith, and knowledge that Rose is going to save the day.
Really?
That's the line.
Yeah, or if you want to hoo it up a bit, Rose's timeline is so integral to the future of the universe that somehow it will persist.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that. So at this point, he's sacrificed Toby because he doesn't know who... he doesn't know where the intellect of the devil is, right?
No, I don't think he does.
Which actually, it raises another question. Since he doesn't know that Toby inhabits... Or sorry, that the intellect of the devil inhabits the body of Toby, doesn't that mean that... even if he smashes the whatever, the weird gateway thingy, thus sends the body of the devil and this whole impossible planet into the black hole, the intellect of the devil is still going to persist and survive and be somewhere, right? He doesn't know where it is. He can only assume that it's on that spaceship.
So I think the idea, again, trying to come up with arguments for these writers, is that if he... destroys the gate and the thing falls into the...
So the intellect can't survive without the body?
No. It's that cone of gravity without one thing, that all collapses too. So any escape that he was trying to make, it's all fine.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Actually, yeah.
I think one of the logical leaps... You might want to check this. You might actually want to watch the episode without us all talking over it. But you can cut in what's right.
I am not
right.
Rewatching
it. What's right. Well, anyway, I think one of the logical leaps the Doctor makes is that the intellect can't survive without the body. I think he does say that.
I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
So that's not what
I think it is. But I think it's something he says.
So, in the interim, Rose smashes a bolt through the window and then unseats Toby, and then Toby...
Once Toby has gone properly crazy.
Toby's
I am the fire and the agony and your mum.
Yeah, he goes totally goddamn bonkers. He's vacuumed into the black
hole. At some point.
Ladies and gentlemen, check out the screenshot on whobackwhen.com. That is ridiculous. Because at this point, it doesn't matter what the intellect is that powers Toby, right? Toby is still a goddamn human body. How is he expelling, like, methane gas or something from his goddamn mouth?
Maybe that's one of his hobbies. Maybe, like, Toby was mostly into fire eating. Fire eating.
I think Danny's just farted that much in the rocket that if you clink
he's inhaled
your teeth
as much.
Yeah, that lights the spark and it just blows out of your mouth.
Is breathing fire any more ridiculous than eyes turning bright red? Or is one of them
could make
more
a film
of
with
a
blood? It's about as ridiculous as Iron Man 3, where the exact same thing happens. But whatever.
Yeah. So the Doctor falls backwards into a shiny, flat, blue...
No. He doesn't even fall. What he's just running along, and then he's blown by a portentous puff of air.
Oh, yum.
Yeah. And
okay.
Into falling into the TARDIS. The TARDIS ex machina.
Which has landed, as previously predicted,
sunny side up.
Goddamn right.
And, he goes, grabs the ship, takes everyone to safety, everyone's very happy. End of episode, let's call that.
I mean, there are just a couple of shitty points to make about the very end, where in the previous episode, the Doctor and Rose just rocked up, and they were like, oh great, people we have never met and can't possibly be here. Now you're part of the crew, and you're the vice captain, because you're clever. And at the very end, Ida actually stops for a moment and thinks, well, who are you? And
was
actually asks the question.
I'm not even sure I remember these people.
Yeah,
that's
the
how
end.
Cursory they were.
Oh, they had a good bit there where he was like, I hope we see you again. And she was like, I hope so. By which I take to mean she was like, I hope I get another bit part in this, because I'm struggling to pay these bills.
And then the captain, you know, having shown no development from point A, where he and the ethicist and everyone just can't stand the Ood, and they're the most insufferable, servile race, he starts reciting and it's taken to imply that he will carry on reciting the name of every Ood who died, and saying that they all died with honours, and they're just as honourable as any other crew member.
No, I feel like that's completely undone by the fact that when he recites the names of the Ood that have died, it's like Ood 2, Ood 3. Well, also, let's not forget, Ood 4.
Well, I mean, they can't make up names from them at this point. Let's call them Barry Ood and Greg Ood and, you know, Hillary Ood.
I feel like at that point it's very, very clear that the Ood, or rather the humans, don't give a shit about the Ood.
Anyway, those are my two points about how the last shots of this episode were as shitty as many of the preceding ones. Reviews.
Okay, so it's time for the reviews. I'll go first.
Go for it.
Well, with the same pit, I don't know. I think that I'm relatively, I don't know, I'm full of admiration for the idea that they took on one of the fundamental fucking problems, questions that have always plagued us as mankind, you know, is there a God, is there a devil, you know, all those sort of things. And so basically the ultimate evil. It's a weird time to kind of blow your load on that one. Don't really build up to something like that throughout a series, like in Buffy, the first evil, you build up to this like terrible big thing. It's like just a random episode. There's the devil, maybe he's the devil, maybe not. So I don't know, I feel like they went for gravitas and kind of missed. And yeah, there's like ham-fistedness. Didn't like the paternal side of the Doctor and him being like, you crazy kids running around, scraping your elbows. And, you know, I didn't like that at all. I don't know. I think the build-up was better than the payoff for this duplex of an episode. So I'm going to give it a 1.8.
What did you give the last one?
Like much higher. I think 2 point something.
I think you were both 3.
Oh, 3 maybe. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Still, no.
You gave it the same mark.
Yeah, I've dropped off heavily. That was a second episode that did not...
Wow.
Did not live up to the promise.
Interesting. Okay. Rawmeister.
Well, fucking hell. This is only the second episode of New Who I've even seen, so my frame of reference is extremely lacking at this point, and I didn't see the build-up at all, so... Fuck. I don't know, I thought it was alright. I enjoyed the devil shit, but yeah, I agree, it wasn't treated with much...
The devil shit?
Yeah. It was... That's a big topic, and I think you could do a hell of a lot more of it than they did, and yeah, it seems like the devil is very easy to get rid of. Yeah, fuck, I give it a 2. You can have a 2.
Okay. I, too, was a little underworld. I mean underworld. Anyway. I mean, there was so much logical bollocks in this episode. And there was so many, like Nick says, ham-fisted elements where, you know, you could see they needed a chase scene and then they needed emotional punctuation in that scene. So the old soldier, who hadn't really displayed any redeeming or charming qualities up to that point, was the guy nominated to be bumped off to this swelling, you know, emotion-inducing music, when really they were just sat on the other side, and the captain had plenty of time to lift the thing up, bring the thing down, the guy goes in. That sort of thing persisted throughout, and then the Doctor, at the end, he as I said, he leaps around in the service of the plot completely. There's another thing I want to mention right now, because it didn't get mentioned before, where he has an air cushion to support his fall from an inconceivable height.
He does say that someone... Sorry to cut you off there, mini-review, but like, yeah. He does say that someone other than the devil, like some... I think, like, alluding to the fact that maybe it's someone who put the devil in chains.
Well, he surmises
has saved his life.
Someone who might be the opposite of the devil.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Whoever it is, then...
Yeah, that'd be...
Let's not go into that.
But it's complete
territory. Conjecture.
What I'm building up to is, you know, kids might think there's an air cushion here on Earth, and if I jump out of this building, hey, there's air. I'll wake up when I hit the ground. No, you won't. You will die. So, you know, beware of this episode, kids.
Yes, but...
Watch other ones.
Jump into yeah, but seriously, does he not actually make the point of, I was spared in order to... ...
Well, I mean...
Is that not the whole point? He was spared in order to then defeat the devil.
But like I said, it's just conjecture on his part. He, you know, and that's just...
Do you know,
the writers...
Do you know what makes less sense?
Yeah.
Is that the light, the bringers of the light, imprison the devil here on this planet, from this black hole, so that some point, some dickhead would turn up in Converse and finish the job?
What did you do?
Yeah. Throw him in the black hole, save everybody being plagued by images of ultimate evil. It's a good question, Nick.
I'm sorry. 1.8 is too high. Well, 1.5.
At the same time, I liked large parts of the episode. There were parts when Rose went from idiot to genius in, you know, the blink of an eye. And that's not the bit I liked. What I'm saying is she had some good moments in this episode. The Doctor had some good moments and reflections. And there were some genuinely suspenseful bits and some exciting bits, like when the Ood grabbed the door and you're like, bloody hell, actually, I didn't see that coming. And Toby's, you know, coquettish little pact with the Ood. His hot little screenshot face.
That moment.
Yeah. And you know, they didn't have the, like I say, Nick said, there's good reason for it that the Doctor and the Devil weren't sparring at the end. But they did have a bit of an interaction, and there was some good stuff there. And so they didn't completely fulfil the premise as I would have liked. But I'm going to give it a 2.6. I think there's just enough good stuff to outweigh the negatives.
Nice one.
Yeah, all right.
Just me left. What did I give the last one?
You gave it a 3.2 or a
3.4. 3.2 or 3.4. See, like, weirdly, I feel like this was a better episode than the first installment, but I still would not give it anywhere, like, in the threes. It's still a 2.8, whatever. But it still feels like it was a better episode. Starting off with downsides, the Ood were built up in part one, and they were given an identity, they were given sort of a lack of meaning in a way, like they were just used as slaves, like their entire raison d'etre was to not have any personal say in things. But in part two of this double installment, they're just there as zombies. That's their entire... Like, the only reason they're there is to chase, and it's not very interesting. Whereas, however, in part one, we have... Wait, hang on.
3.6.
I gave it a 3.6.
I gave it a 3.2. It was off my brain. Was I just enjoying the company too
much? Very interesting. Yeah, so I'm not going anywhere near 3.6, but... Fine. Ood completely useless in this one compared to the first one. The humans, it feels like they wrote the humans in a way alluding to them having more of a backstory than they were actually given in part one. For example, the older gentleman sacrifices himself. The whole scene is set up in such a way that, oh, this guy that we've now come to relate to gives up his life. But we don't. Like, no one cares about him. In fact, no one really knows who he is as a person. I'm giving it a 2.7, and I still feel like it's a better episode than the first one, paradoxically. Who has something to plug or is on Twitter? Starting on the left.
Hi, I'm at Nicolele. It's like nickel, but ukulele.
Rawmeister, are you actually still on Twitter?
I am, but I can't even remember what my damn name is. It's been a while. No, can't.
Something about Retro Metronome.
Oh, that's the one, yeah.
For a more enthusiastic plugging of my Twitter, please see some old episodes.
Druid, you have quite possibly my favourite Twitter handle ever.
Yes.
Drew back when. Yes. That is amazing.
Completely in honour of this enterprise and to signify how my identity is merging with it and will eventually be subsumed up.
Is your profile picture just an old picture of you?
It's actually an old picture of Leon.
But I would be grateful if people followed me on the back of listening to this, so I could actually be convinced that there are some listeners out there.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a Friday, but if it is, then let's consider this your Friday follow. Follow Drew back when.
Thank you.
Absolutely fantastic. And I am Bonk, and here's a soundbite of JD seeing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Bonkin.
Thanks, JD.
Ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, thank you very much for listening. Thank you to our audience of one, Miriam.
Shazam! Ood, dude.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends, no problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?